Today is August 17th, 2016, and this is episode number 373 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a professional layabout. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I didn't realize you'd been elevated to professional. I'm really impressed. Yeah.
I may have used that title before, although I think I was just a layabout before, so this would count as an upgrade.
So you got a promotion. Well done.
Yes, what happens when I don't actually think about titles ahead of time?
We get very interesting titles.
Excellent. Excellent. Speaking of interesting.
Yes. Do tell, Brian.
Oh, my segues are just so stupid. I mean, you know, that's anyway. We had a really cool story. Fast Company has been doing a series on Apple executives, Apple really, based on interviews. So they scored an interview with Tim Cook and Craig Federighi and Eddie Q, for instance. And they did two stories, one of which was just the story from the interviews. And then the follow-up story was the actual transcript from the interview with Craig and Eddie. Interesting stuff. Really, really, really interesting stuff. If you're interested in Apple, you should read both of those articles.
They are great articles.
As well as, who did the other interview with Tim Cook? It wasn't the Post, was it?
It may have been. I'm not sure off the top of my head now.
Yeah, it was the Post, Washington Post. Yeah, we posted a snippet. The Post included a couple of video snippets from the interview because they filmed the interview and recorded it. How old am I?
That's right. Filmed this interview it, really? Filmed before a live studio audience.
It's like, you know, got a guy turning the, anyway, there's two little segments that they posted where Tim's talking about taking over from Steve Jobs. Interesting stuff. And you should go watch all those for sure. Like, absolutely. Go
watch all those films.
Watch those films.
Head down to the CinemaScope.
Read the Post article. Read the Fast Company stuff. And then yesterday, Fast Company included another story based on an interview with a former Apple engineer. And I found that one interesting too, because he talked a lot about you know, sort of working, well, yeah, about working at Apple, and there's one story, and it's another really, really interesting piece, and I took away one story in particular, and to me the story sort of like, I mean, like we know, right? We know that Apple focuses on the user. But it's right. One thing to say that, and it's one thing. I mean, this one story. This guy does. So Bob Messerschmidt is his name. Messerschmidt, same name as German airplane company. Bob Messerschmidt told the story. What he did is he is the guy who was in charge of architecting, and I've never liked that word as a.
Well, it fits better on the cart than architectifying.
I suppose it does. So his job was to architect the heart rate sensor in Apple Watch. Right? And, you know, Apple did a pretty good job with that.
Yeah, they did.
And he told the story about how his first idea was, well, you want the sensors on underneath the wrist because that's the best place to get a reading, right?
Sure. Totally makes sense.
Get your skin center and you've got prominent vessels right there. You want to get a good reading on your heart rate, go to the inner wrist. And so he's like, well, so we'll put the sensors in the strap. And that way people, you know, they've got their watch on. Of course, you know, some people do wear their watches underneath in the first place, but whatever. And And then you know, the sensors would be in the strap, and then I'm sure that they were thinking, plus this would be great because that means the watch could be thinner.
Sure, that makes sense.
He didn't mention that, but I mean, that had to have gone through their mind. Like the more you can offload to the strap, the smaller the watch could be. And so he goes to the design team, who was actually in charge of what Apple Watch would be. And he tells them this, and they're like, no, that's not actually, he had a quote. According to him, they said, that's not the trend. That's not the design trend. That's not the fashion trend. We want to have interchangeable bands. So we don't have any sensors. So we don't want to have any sensors in the band. Just end of story.
Yeah. Not even like, oh, well, let's think about it. Just no, bands are going to come off. So no sensors, period.
Yeah, and plus, you know, that's just not the way people want to wear these things, right? You know, he's thinking like an engineer, and they're thinking like users. And, well, I mean, there's so much I love about this. So, you know, it's a vast majority of companies, what he told them was an engineering truth.
Right.
If you want to have a good heart rate sensor, you need to put it underneath the wrist. So if you're going to do a watch, put it on the strap. That's an engineering truth. That's the best way to do it. End of story.
And that Apple, totally makes sense.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. It totally makes sense. That's where it stops at most companies. But at Apple, it was, no, we're not interested in your engineering truth. That's not the way people do stuff. You know, go do something else. So he came up with a second idea. And his second idea was... that, fine, we can put it underneath the watch so it's on top of the wrist, but it's going to have to be a really snug, tight-fitting strap. You know, that way we've got good contact with skin, and we can get a good, accurate reading. Again, this is an engineering truth.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it stops with most companies. Actually, it doesn't even get there with most companies, but for those companies who did think differently, it's going to stop here because, again, this is another one of those truths. And the design people, which would be Johnny Ive's team, and the other people that were working on, Jeff Williams was ultimately in charge of the Apple Watch. They said, no, people don't wear watches that way. They like to wear them loose. Actually, he had a quote again. No, that's not how people wear watches. They wear them like really floppy on their wrist. That's what Mr. Messerschmitt said. They said.
Mm-hmm.
So again, Apple just had no truck with this, with these engineering truths. Apple was not interested in what the engineering truth was. And the thing, this is something that Apple does that no one else does. When you don't accept what people tell you, there are a lot of people who can do amazing things. You know, and that's part mm-hmm. of the whole Steve Jobs things, right? I mean, like, you know, Steve Jobs going back to the Mac, where, I mean, you know, of course there were negative. I'm jumping all over the place here. There were negative aspects.
This is a fun ride.
The Apple III, Steve Jobs said he wanted it to be fanless, right? So the Apple III was fanless, and it overheated and was a piece of junk.
Yes.
Right? So this is one of those times when Steve Jobs rejected an engineering truth. The engineering truth was, we got to cool this thing, right? And Steve Jobs rejected that engineering truth, and it was a catastrophe.
Right, but he revisited that later on and found a way to do it more effectively.
With the iMac.
Yes, and was there a fan in the G4 Cube? Or was that just convection?
I think it was convection. I honestly can't remember.
So, well, regardless, Steve just had this fetish for no fans.
Yeah, because fans are noisy. Who wants fans?
Yeah, well, engineers.
And what?
Engineers. They want fans.
Yeah, they want fans because you got to cool stuff. And, you know, it was so interesting, the first fanless iMac. And it's like, man, this is what Steve is trying to do back with the Apple III. He can finally do it.
Yeah, he could finally do it.
Finally do it. Fanless. It was fanless.
But he had to push the engineers to find a way to make it work.
The cube was fanless. Yeah, right. He had to reject the engineering truce. And Apple does this a lot. And it's interesting to me that Apple still does this. This is a good thing. But this is part of that. I mean, this is like when people tell you what they can do and you tell them, no, do more. And they respect you enough to do it. Like I said, some people are capable of doing amazing things. And apparently that's what happened with Mr. Messerschmitt, because he came up with two ideas. They were both rejected. And then he came up with whatever the heck they're doing now with Apple Watch and the heart rate sensor, which again is pretty darn good.
Right. And yeah, and so they ended up with something really good because they were pushed.
Right. Because their engineering truths were rejected and they had to come up with new engineering truths. And I love that. And it's, I love that. I love that Apple does this. I love that Apple is a company that does this. This is part of the Apple thing. But this is like I wish that more companies would adopt the same mindset. I mean, you know, this is kind of like goes partial. This goes hand in hand with the good enough mentality.
Yes,
good enough to me was what made Windows suck so bad and what made PCs suck so bad back in the day, back when, you know, when PCs still mattered.
And yet it was just fine for clearly a lot of people and a lot of companies.
A lot of people. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I would meet, it's so funny, you know, I would meet, going back to the 90s, Windows developers and Mac developers. And there was just this gulf between the two in terms of what they would accept. Like Windows developers were just like universally, they were just like, you know, this works. It's good enough. It's good to go.
Yeah. And I was amazed back in those days when I'd be doing something on my Mac and it would just work and they'd be going through some workaround to try and accomplish the same task. And when I'd ask about it, they'd be like, oh, well, you know, it's at least it works. Or the one that always had me shaking my head was when they'd say, well, I don't want to do it on a Mac because it's too easy and it doesn't feel like I'm accomplishing any real work. So I should do it on the PC in Windows where I have to try harder. That's some serious Stockholm syndrome right there.
That's the hamster choosing the flywheel with the razors.
Yeah.
Or the rat. I guess rats do that.
Seriously? Huh. That's messed up.
I haven't gone and read the original study, so I this actually could be an urban myth for all I know. But I've definitely encountered the notion that rats will choose the hardest treadmill, including like one that included razor blades.
That's seriously messed up.
Yeah. So if anyone knows about that, if any of our listeners has some actual knowledge instead of the complete, you know, nonsense that I'm pulling out of thin air, to be polite, please let us know at ACM at MacObserver.com or at Context Machine on Twitter.
Yes, let us know because because we clearly don't have the capability of using the internet ourselves.
No, not at all. That'd be crazy.
Well, so, yeah. Our readers are so smart anyhow.
And not to say, just to kind of stay on this tangent, I also remember having a really interesting, being witness to a really interesting conversation between a Mac developer and a Windows developer. And the Mac guy was explaining basically explaining his toolbox of workarounds for all the problems in macOS. This would have been macOS 7, 6, or 8 days, maybe 7.8, actually.
Okay. That's a long time ago.
And he just took it for granted that you need all these workarounds to solve these shortcomings. And the Windows developer was like, well, that's just ridiculous. Why would you accept that? And the Mac guy was just like, well, because that's what I have to do to make my apps. And you know, this Windows developer had a really, really slick photo app at the time. This was again in the 90s. Mm-hmm. That worked really well, but the interface wasn't all that great. It was good enough.
Yeah, good enough.
Yep, good enough. It's good enough. So anyway, yeah, Apple usually doesn't take good enough. I mean, you know, and don't get me wrong, I'm still cranky about Apple Watch. I like it, I don't love it.
You know, actually, I think good enough is a great way to describe watchOS 1.
Yeah, all right.
Because it was good enough to get the product out the door.
Yeah.
But it was very lacking and didn't have that Apple polish that we expect.
Yeah, I don't know if the polish is the right word I'd want to semanticize over.
Well,
it's a technical term, by the way.
Yeah, I was about to start working on the new design because, you know, of course, we're going to have to do mostly pedantic T-shirt. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking here's another one. I semanticize.
Yeah, we should do that. Anyway, but the watchOS 3, definitely. I've been running the beta now for a week and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Have you?
I've been running watchOS beta and iOS 10 beta for a few weeks now.
Yeah, I'm a little bit behind on that, but I definitely like watchOS 3 so far.
Yeah, I'm liking watchOS 3 a lot, and it gets better with each beta.
It does. And in particular, by the way, I'm enjoying the activity watch face.
Oh, interesting. I have not been using the activity watch face. You know what? Since you're liking it so much, I'm going to switch my watch face to activity for a little while and just try it out.
Of course, you know, the problem with the activity watch face is that it broadcasts, you know, anyone who's looking at my watch can see what a slug I am.
Oh, well, maybe I won't switch to that watch face.
Yeah, but you're not a slug.
Yeah, well, still. You know, by Boulder standards, I probably am considered a slug.
Yeah, that could be. That's another story, though. So anyway, yeah, good story. A really interesting story from Mr. Messerschmidt. He had some other observations. It was actually quite a long interview that they published. Including, by the way, his belief. He didn't name Apple University.
Okay.
But he talked about the effort to bottle Steve Jobs. He said that once Steve accepted that his time was limited, that people started trying to, there was an effort to bottle up his way of thinking, and that's what Apple University is. And I would actually call Apple University a raging success from the outside. And anybody's opinion, my opinion, his opinion, your opinion. It's just, you know, it's just a person's opinion. His opinion said that that was a failed effort and was pointless.
Interesting.
I thought that was interesting too. By the way, he left. So he came to work at to Apple in 2010 when Apple bought his company. He stayed at Apple for 3 years. The heart rate monitor was his signature item. He left Apple to do a new startup that's on, I think, Indiegogo right now. That does blood, like a, it takes a small amount of your blood and then gives you all kinds of information back.
Oh, cool.
So health monitoring stuff.
You know, I'm really glad that he did everything that he did for the heart rate monitor, because that actually ended up being like a really important thing for me at one point when I was having an allergic reaction and was not aware because my cognitive skills were failing. And it was through my Apple Watch and some clever texting that was happening at the same time that we were able to figure out I was having a problem, because my Apple Watch had been tracking my heart rate and had logged that it had been way too high for way too long.
Right. Yeah, he said, this is another quote from Mr. Messerschmidt. He said, "I'm so proud of my contribution to the heart rate sensor because it generally it's generally discussed as the most accurate sensor that Apple has ever put in a product. It had to be, because you look at the trials and tribulations of a company like Fitbit. Fitbit is great, don't get me wrong, but they are wading through lawsuits right now about the accuracy of the heart rate sensor. They didn't put enough thought into the use cases."
That's true. Fitbit is dealing with lawsuits right now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have not seen a single lawsuit for Apple's heart rate sensor. And if there was going to be one, I think it would have already happened by now, because Apple has pretty deep pockets and people love suing them.
It's true. Have you used the Breeze app, by the way?
Yes. Have you?
Yes. I like it.
I like it too. And I remember when Apple showed off the Breathe app at WWDC, I heard people laughing. And I remember seeing many people talk about how it was stupid and how Apple had lost their focus and why are they doing that. And to me, that just kind of underlies the whole thing about people don't get Apple's bigger vision.
Nope. I thought it was amazing the moment I saw it.
See, and I thought it was a great idea, but I didn't know if I would actually like it myself. And it turns out that...
But you never do, though.
I know.
That's your reaction to every new thing.
And then it turns out I really like it. Guess what? I really like Breathe.
It's clockwork for you.
Well, you know, at least I'm predictable for that. No, I totally love the Breathe app. I think it's fantastic, and I didn't expect it to have as big an impact on me as it did.
What kind of impact has it had?
It made me realize that I'm running around doing so many other things without stopping to take a moment for myself. That, I mean, it just, you know how it builds up over time and you don't realize?
So what the Breathe app does is it has you breathe for a minute, and it has you stop. It's like, you know, stop and focus your attention on your breath, I think is the wording that Apple uses. Mm-hmm. And then I think it starts off at 7 breaths per minute. That's the default setting.
Yeah. You can change it.
But yeah. I changed mine to 5, and I think Dave is doing 6, but I like taking those deep breaths.
Yeah, I've been leaving mine at 7 for right now, and that just because I wanted to see how it worked just with the default, because I'm sure Apple really thought about that.
I'm sure too. It seemed a little fat anyway. So, and what it does is it has an image that expands as you're supposed to breathe in,
and it taps you on the wrist.
Yeah, it does this. It uses the Taptic engine to tap on your wrist, and it does it in such a way that it feels like a balloon stretching, doesn't it?
That's interesting. I had not thought about it that way.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Interesting. Well, okay.
You know, like a rubber band, you know, like you're stretching something and, you know, and the tighter it gets and the more stretched out it gets, you get to a point where it's harder to pull. So that's what that. And then you let your breath out.
Huh.
So you could actually close your eyes and if you have any kind of sense of timing, just focus on the haptic feedback on your wrist. My question to you is, do you close your eyes or do you watch the image?
I do not watch the image. I sometimes close my eyes.
What do you watch? What do you look at?
If it happens when I'm in my apartment, I typically close my eyes. If I'm outside, I keep my eyes open, not because I'm afraid I'm going to get mugged or something, but because I'm in a place where I have all this beautiful scenery around me, and so I'll be looking at the mountains or some trees or flowers or whatever.
So I stick my watch in front of me, and it's just left of center because I'm a right-hand person. I wear my watch on my left wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so my watch is just left of center. So my head is, I guess, is tilted just a little bit, and I sort of lose. I watch my watch face, but I let my eyes go out of focus.
Okay.
So that it's almost like a, you know,
it's like almost hypnotic.
Yeah, like a hypnotic thing. And I did try it yesterday, and this is the reason why I'm asking, is because I tried it with my eyes closed for the first time, just using the haptic feedback. And my timing was off just enough that, and it's probably harder at 5 breaths per minute than it is at 7, because there's a little bit of time before starting the next breath.
Okay.
So my point here, my rambling point, is that my timing was just a little bit off when I didn't watch the watch face, so I went back to watching.
Okay.
So I'd like to hear if any of our listeners are running watchOS 3 and you've been using the Breathe app, or if you're going to start using the Breathe app now because we're talking about it. I'd like to know how you're using it and what your thoughts are on it. And this is not just a call, just to, you know, because we always want you telling us what you think. I mean, it's super important to us.
Yeah. But we always want your opinion on what Brian has said wrong. I mean, we always love your
opinion. Exactly. Exactly. I did 3 mistakes yesterday afternoon. 3 mistakes in articles. I mean, just like horrible mistake. I didn't spell check an article before publishing it. I had license spelled wrong in the title and the article. Two C's, no S's.
Wow. Okay. In your defense, at least you were consistent.
Yeah, and I had the L, the I, the E, and the N, and the other E all just fine. And I also got, you know, I got a fact wrong too. I screwed up an article. Anyway, so we always put your opinion on what I've done wrong. In this particular case, this is a new thing, and you know, this is part of Apple's focus. Like Tim has been talking a lot about. How many times can I change subject? Tim has been talking about wellness, mm-hmm. and health. And this is just, you know, this is part of that wellness thing. He talks about how the healthcare industry is a $9 trillion a year industry. And it's very clear that Apple is, he has told us that Apple is going to be a player in the healthcare industry.
Yeah. You know, I love your term that you coined, cook code.
Thank you.
And I love that because you've coined that, I now pay closer attention to Tim Cook's phrasing, because there's so much that he is telling us without telling us.
Yeah, people miss it.
Oh, yeah. And what Tim Cook told me with his comments about the health and fitness market is that Apple is going into that space in a very serious way, in a very big way, and they plan on being one of the names in that space.
Yes. One of the names, right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big enough market. There's going to be more than one name.
And Breathe is just, you know, it's just one little aspect of it. It's just Breathe is, I mean, I have no idea what Breathe is actually doing for me.
I'll tell you what it's doing for me.
Please.
It's making me stop.
Yes.
That's the big thing. It makes me stop. And for a moment, I am in myself. And at the end of that moment, I am far more aware of how much time I'm spending on everything else while neglecting myself, which when I say it that way, it sounds actually pretty bad, but it's, you know, it's not that bad, but it makes me stop and I'm more aware.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. I like the fact that I am stopping and thinking about not thinking about anything. I'm thinking about breathing. Is what I'm thinking about. And there is something. I'm sure it's related. I say this. I have no idea, but to me, it's surely related to the benefits of meditation. I mean, it's only a minute. So the Breathe app has you breathe for a minute, and it will remind you to do this throughout the day. Like, I haven't gotten a reminder more than twice, I don't think. Like, what is your frequency?
I think it's a couple times a day. And it's interesting when it's happening. And I don't know if it's choosing when to give its little notices based on how active I appear to be, or if it's just that I am so crazy busy all the time that it just happens that way. But yeah, it's probably twice a day.
Right. Breathe up. We didn't even intend to talk about the Breathe up.
No, but you see, that's one of the things I love about what we do. Because we can just kind of go anywhere, and we don't freak out about exploring new topics on the show.
It's true. So watchOS 3 is fun. Breathe app, really interesting to me. I'm very much enjoying it. Thrilled that Apple included it in watchOS 3. Looking forward to seeing what the next watch is going to be like. It seems like we're going to get one this fall, doesn't it?
I don't know. Maybe. If we were getting one this fall, I would have thought we would have seen some images, you know, components leaking already, and we really haven't seen anything. So it could happen this fall. I'm inclined to think it's going to be in the spring.
Yeah. Okay. Could be.
Yeah. But at least we're in consensus. There's a new Apple Watch coming relatively soon.
Well, 6 months for sure, but I mean, it could be, I don't know.
That counts as relatively soon. I mean, sort of. I mean, that means okay, if we look at it in Mac Pro timescales, mm-hmm. That's like next week practically.
Oh, Mac Pro, it's funny because it hurts.
Yeah, I know.
You know what? I have one more thing on the strap.
Okay.
This idea of putting sensors in the strap, I sure would love a great looking, especially a great looking leather strap, but it could be rubber. It could theoretically be plastic, I suppose, or even canvas. I don't know. But that to me is the thing I'd like to have for my mechanical watch. It's, you know, a smart strap and you know, something that does the, I don't need any feedback on it, right? I don't need a screen.
Sure. You could have it communicating to your iPhone through Bluetooth. Your iPhone becomes your screen.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and we've already seen that, it sort of hasn't really made any news in a while, but this is what Tag was doing. Tag was making a smart strap. A couple of companies were working on a smart strap, and I haven't really seen a smart strap that I thought was really attractive. And so far, the smart straps have all been specific watch. That's a term, man. Work with me.
Hold on. I'm writing it down so that I can put it in my dictionary.
Specific watch specific.
SWS. That's the acronym.
Yes. Yeah, there we go. And that's a thing that would probably get me wearing my mechanical again, which I do prefer my mechanical to Apple Watch, but I wear my Apple Watch all the time.
Yeah, well, I get why you wear your Apple Watch all the time. It's you don't have Breathe on your you have a Zenith, right?
Yeah.
I remember when you let me try that on. That was a special day. I don't think you let just anyone try on your watch.
No, I do not.
That was pretty cool. Thank you for doing that. Awesome. I think my one arm is longer now because the watch is so big.
It's a little heavy.
But it looks good on you. Now, if you could only get your sensors, you'd be set.
Yeah, I would. I would wear it a lot when instead of, I'd probably wear it whenever I went out, and I'd wear my Apple Watch the rest of the time.
You know what?
And not for appearances, just because, because I have an issue with how people perceive me, but because maybe it is why. Golly. Oh my goodness, am I like really shallow?
You're not really shallow.
Maybe I should get the dual band system.
Yeah.
Did you the strap is like the sort of this combination of buckles and straps that let you have your mechanical watch on top of your wrist and your Apple Watch hidden underneath your wrist so no one can see it.
So it's like the mullet of watch bands.
It is the mullet of watch bands. It's actually I think that's how I think it was the Next Web covered it. They said it was like business in the front and party in the back.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, yeah. All right, we had other topics. Let's talk about your how to identify fake iPhones, because I enjoyed you walking us through that stuff.
Oh, sure. Okay, well, the first thing is, it's amazing how many people will see an image on the internet and just accept it as fact. And
sure.
Yeah, and I get why we do that, but people need to take a more critical eye to these leaked images, because in most cases, they're not legit shots. And there are some things that you can check or look for that make it easy to tell right away if you're looking at a fake shot. And one of the easiest to tell that you're not looking at an iPhone 7 is when it's a shot showing the back of an iPhone and you can see the S moniker from the iPhone 6S, because yes. They hadn't photoshopped that out.
Right.
And I saw several images last week that were purporting to show iPhone 7 cases or bodies so that you could see various design elements of the phone, and they all had the S on them. Mm-hmm. So they were not iPhone 7s. It doesn't matter if they were mock-ups or if someone is doing some Photoshop action on an iPhone 6S, they weren't legit. If you get a shot that is close enough where you can see the model number, look at the model number. Apple has a web page where they list every single iPhone model number and give you a photograph of the phone so that you see what everything matches up to. And on all of these shots that I've seen so far where you can actually see the model number, it's for like an iPhone 5 or something ridiculous. So not even an iPhone 6 or 6S, which is going to look presumably closer to the design of an iPhone 7. Hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and then you also pointed out some of the, like ill-fitting or, like messed up knobs.
Yeah, look at seams. because Apple is like hardcore about making sure that all the seams are smooth and clean and unobtrusive. And a lot of the mock-ups that you'll see that are being shown as if they were legit products, you can see where the seams don't fit together well. Or if you look close, you'll be able to see the tracking lines from where they 3D printed whatever it is that they're showing you, and they didn't bother to give it a good sand job.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, one thing about images that come out of almost exclusively Asia is that sometimes parts can leave a factory, legitimate parts, mm-hmm. can leave a factory without them being finished.
Yes.
Or without them being part of a fully assembled phone.
Yes. Yep. That happens.
It happens a lot. I mean, just there are too many hands involved in Apple's manufacturing process for Apple to keep control of everything. That's a big part of why we get so many product leaks in the first place. And some images are legit. Like last year, do you remember like we were seeing the stacks and stacks and stacks of iPhone cases?
Yes.
Or no, of iPhone boxes. And then we were seeing, there's not all images are fakes, but some of them are obviously fakes. And your guide for spotting them was excellent in doing so.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yes, it's about the critical eye. And you're right. We do get a lot of images that'll show up, especially as we get really close to product launch, that are legit. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned pieces coming out of the factories. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will get a handful of pieces, and then they will just kind of jam them together as best they can so they can take a photo.
Right.
So they may have parts that are legit, but they're not giving you a photo of an actual product because they've just kind of jammed together what they can get.
Yeah, and I wonder if that was the case for the you noted the image with the mute button,
with the crooked mute buttons.
Yeah, and I wonder about those.
Yeah, that's possible. Something like that could also be a thing where someone got a blank for a body, and then they just took switches from other devices and set them in so that they could make it look like a more complete device.
Yeah. And at the same time, while legitimate parts walk out of Apple's of Foxconn's factories, or Pegatron or Megatron or
or Voltron.
Voltron, whatever these companies are, my legitimate parts are walking out all the time, sometimes in quantity. There's also a thriving counterfeit, cottage industry.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
So, people making things making things because they just want to make something that looks like an iPhone. Because there are people who want to buy something that looks like an iPhone, knowing that it's a fake.
Right.
Or people that actually are trying to perpetrate a fraud. Well, it is a fraud, but who are actually trying to trick people into buying these fake products. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's all the case makers all trying to get a leg up on each other. That's actually one reason why so many cases, so many iPhone backs, the physical assembly, will walk out of factories because case makers are paying money to get them ahead of time so that they can
so they can build their case designs.
Yeah, get their own get the tooling manufactured, the design tools made, and which all that stuff requires lead time. Apple doesn't cooperate with any case maker giving them access ahead of time for these things.
No. And actually, Apple has an incentive to not do that because they're making their own cases now.
It's true. So it's rather complex. A lot of images to come out of Asia are legit, but a lot of them are also faked, or someone thinks they're real and they're not. You know, mm-hmm. I have no doubt that a lot of these images that are fakes are being presented by people who actually think that they've got something.
Oh, absolutely, and it happens. But it's a great reminder that we should look at all of these leaked images with a more critical eye.
Well said, sir. Well said. Well said. All right. So we have one more topic.
Oh, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. Intel is now an ARM processor licensee.
How about if I change exciting to, well, that's kind of fascinating.
It is. It is fascinating because Intel, of course, has its own architecture, x86.
Right.
And Intel has been hoping that its Atom processor would be the mobile chip of choice. And the problem is that ARM has largely eaten Intel's lunch in mobile.
So, okay. So do you see Intel getting a license to produce ARM chips as a concession that their own mobile chip platform is a failure?
For sure. But it's certainly more than that too. It's a smart move because Intel has fabs. You want to keep a fab going. Mm-hmm. Fab is not making stuff. It's just, you know, it's throwing money out the window.
Right.
So you want to always have your fabs going, and taking on contract work to fit in between your work for your own processors, that's a way of making money. And so, you know, it's could be the difference between lots of profit and no profit.
Yeah. Okay. So since Intel hasn't been able to really get its own mobile device processor off the ground, because they do make mobile processors, like
it's the Atom.
Yeah. So they haven't been able to get that off the ground. So they can supplement the time that otherwise would have been used to fabricate those chips to make other chips, in this case, ARM.
Yeah. And then there's Apple.
So, you know, tell me, Brian, how does Apple fit into this?
Well, and in a number of ways. The first and foremost, well, I don't know if it's first or foremost, but there's Apple and Samsung, right? Samsung makes a lot of Apple's processors. Mm-hmm. Apple's been moving some business to Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Corporation or company. Which is it? Do you know?
TSMC.
Yeah, TSMC. All right, fine.
Just go with that. It's easier.
Okay, we'll go with that. TSMC. Apple's been moving some of its business to TSMC, but it's never been able to fire Samsung. And I mean, with all of the shenanigans with Samsung having so systematically ripped off Apple, so deliberately ripped off Apple and largely gotten away with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I cannot imagine a scenario where Tim Cook would not like to fire them from doing anything.
It looks like Apple is getting a little bit closer yet again.
Well, it looks like Apple maybe has the potential for getting closer, because now Apple, Intel knows how to make processors. Intel is really good at this.
Yeah, it's what they do.
It is what they do. And as a matter of fact, they have a 10 nanometer process that is ahead of, like, Samsung has shown a 10 nanometer process wafer, but they're probably behind TSMC, which is said that they'll start doing 10 nanometer stuff at the end of 2016. And Intel, in the meanwhile, has already begun trial productions. So Intel's a little bit ahead of everybody else on this 10 nanometer thing. Intel knows what it's doing, and Intel does not have a track record of stealing intellectual property from Apple.
Oh, yeah, there's that point, too.
Yeah, neither does TSMC. But I can't help but think that Apple would rather do business with Intel. than any of the Asian companies when it comes to its processor stuff. Because Apple designed its own processors. And these things are kicking everybody else's butt.
Well, sure. I mean, Apple has complete control over the whole product, so it makes it much easier.
Except for the manufacturing.
Except for the manufacturing, yes.
And it still wouldn't have that control when it comes to Intel, but I would just, in my mind, Apple can trust Intel more than it can trust Samsung, for sure. Like I said,
Samsung seems like a pretty safe bet.
Has an actual documented track record of stealing Apple intellectual property.
A very well-documented track record. Intel, yes. However, does not have that. And Intel has a very good working relationship with Apple.
Now, if you're Intel and you're selling processors to Apple for its Macintosh product line, and Apple has, Apple's share in the PC industry has been growing. Imagine thinking about the day that Apple could actually move to ARM for its Macs too, which is something that's been theorized and tossed around for years.
Then Intel would already be in a good place to be able to take over that production.
Yeah, they would want to keep Apple's business.
Of course.
And of course, the iPhone and iPad business is even bigger. But you could actually assume that ARM processors for a desktop computer would be beefier and more expensive than the processors designed for phones and tablets. So one way or another, it's business that Intel would like to have.
And so they've already got their license.
Right, and so they got the license. And they've already announced a deal to make chips for LG, for instance, another Korean company.
Okay.
So that was announced at the time that they announced the license.
So for Apple, they can sit back and watch. Intel gets their ARM license, ARM manufacturing license. LG starts buying chips. Apple gets to see how this whole process goes. And then they can decide later on if they want to send some of their mobile chip business over to Intel.
Right. Plus, one of Apple's entire strategies is when it comes to the logistics chain is pitting one supplier against another to get the best quality and the best price.
Oh, so of course Apple would be able to pit Intel and TSMC against each other,
and Samsung, because you know Apple is yet to fire Samsung.
Well, in this scenario, I'm envisioning Samsung would be out at that point.
Yeah, it's hard to know.
Well, as for processors, for memory, I think Apple's going to be buying that from Samsung and other companies for a long time.
Yeah, and other components too.
Yeah, but the processors, I'm sure you're right. Apple would be really happy to not have Intel making processors Samsung making processors for them.
Yeah, that sure has got some truthiness for me.
Yeah,
feels right.
Yep.
Just feels right. I don't have any evidence for it, but it feels right.
That's okay. It feels right, and it gave you an opportunity to use the term truthiness.
Exactly. Exactly. So and it's an interesting development. It could be good technologically speaking for Apple. This 10 nanometer process, if Intel is ahead on that, 10 nanometer means less energy, smaller, less heat. You know, it's important. It could mean better pricing for Apple. It could just mean being able to can
Samsung.
Samsung. So, you know, all of which, those would all be good things. It's an interesting development. It's all, you know, like there's no deal between Apple or Intel yet.
No, but I'm betting that once Intel had their manufacturing license, someone called over to Apple and said, hey, just want to let you know, put this in the back of your mind, we can do this now.
Yeah, I'm sure. I am sure. I mean, Intel, of course, would court Apple's business. Of course, Intel would court Apple's business.
Of course.
Yeah. Yeah. So, we will see what happens. I there's welling glee within me at the idea of Apple canning Samsung. Oh, that said, Samsung built a factory in Manor, Texas, expressly to build to make chips, including the chips for Apple.
So if Apple totally dumped Samsung, that could have a negative impact on some people's jobs.
Yeah, it would have an impact on people's jobs, but some of those jobs could be in the U.S. and some of those jobs could actually be people that I know or indirectly know. And you know, that's I'm not wanting those people to be screwed by any stretch.
Yeah, that would suck.
All right, listen, I got to get out of the house, man. We actually have pesticide people coming in.
Oh, well, then we need to get you on your way. So I know exactly what to do to spur us into leaving. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and expertly read by some of those same people. Our balance provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom, recorded just for TMO, and that's all for this week.
Stay subscribed, please.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
Really? Really? Okay, Brian, no, I've got it this time.
Top men.
Top men.